Hey, everyone. This is Judy Warner with Altium's On Track podcast. Thank you again for joining. We want to thank you so much for continuing to listen, and we wanted to share with you that from May to June, the listenership has doubled and absolutely exploded because I have amazing guests like I have today, which is Rick Hartley. But before we get going with Rick, I wanted to give a few of you a shout out. I wanted to say thank you for the notes and ideas for the show that you sent to Marad Arishrod. I'm sorry if I'm killing your name. Dave Rehack. Spencer Skelly gave us some really good ideas for future shows. Enoch Sotelo, and also a nice shout out from a LinkedIn group, the Arkansas Signal Integrity Community. And I'm sure you guys will enjoy hearing from Rick today. So I thought I'd throw a fun thing out there since Altium Live is going to be hosted in San Diego October 3rd, 4th, and 5th. I thought I'd give you a little trivia question today. So can you guess how many countries the On Track podcast has reached? If you guess close to the number, then you will be my personal guest at Altium Live, and I'll give you a free ticket there. So how about that? So you can tweet your answers using the hashtag On Track podcast. So whoever is closest, and we will announce the winner on our next podcast. Thanks again for listening. So today we are talking to, in fact, one of our keynote speakers for Altium Live, a dear friend and longtime associate, Rick Hartley. And I'm sure for many of you, he is no stranger, and he is a celebrated speaker. He's been a leader in IPC for many years and a very gifted designer. So, Rick, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's a joy to have you.
Judy, it's a pleasure to be here.
So what I thought we'd talk about today, Rick, first let's queue up and tell people who may not know you, the six people on the planet that may not know Rick Hartley, a little bit about your education and your background and sort of how you became a signal integrity guru.
Oh, you want me to tell this?
Yes, I do.
Okay, I'll try to make it brief.
Okay.
I basically started life in 1965 as a technician with a two-year tech degree and working for a large company in the East. And I spent a couple of years there and decided that wearing one hat a day for six straight months wasn't what I wanted to do at the age of 20, that I really wanted to be able to wear five hats a day. And so I moved to a small company in Columbus, Ohio. I'm still in Columbus. And basically joined an R&D group where I got to do just that. I would be testing boards one day and troubleshooting the next and, you know, so on. Within a couple of years, I moved to field service. And from field service, I learned a lot about troubleshooting problems in field service, as you can well imagine. From field service, I moved into the engineering department in that company, where I became a designer. And as a designer, the designers back then designed everything but the circuit. They designed the circuit boards, the cabinets, the chassis, the wiring harnesses, the interconnects, everything except the actual circuit schematic. And I spent a fair amount of time doing that. And then over time, went to school in the evening and earned a degree in engineering, became a double E, and worked several years as a circuit designer. Around 1976, 7-ish time frame, the company, I had moved companies by then, the company I was working for asked me to, they said, you have some background with printed circuit design. I said, yes, we'd like for you to help out, you know, doing part-time circuit design, part-time board layout. I said, sure, no problem. And after 6 months of that, I decided board design was really the thing I liked most. And so I moved full-time into circuit board design away from full-time circuit design. For a long time, I was doing basically RF design, RF layout, which is a little more challenging, especially back then. Digital layout then wasn't too challenging. Anyway, moved into to board layout, spent a number of years there. And along the way, somewhere about the mid-80s, things started to not work right in the digital domain. And frankly, most people didn't know why this was happening. Most of the engineers I worked with were scratching their heads. I was certainly scratching mine. And over time, by doing a lot of reading, I've purchased over 120 books since between the mid-80s and now, and read them all, some of them three or four times. and basically learned what causes things to function versus not function, what causes interference, and so on. And probably the person that helped me the most to get to the understanding I have today is Ralph Morrison. And I'm going to talk a little bit about Ralph as I go through this. But anyway, by just getting my arms around why people have signal integrity problems, why there are interference issues, it's helped me over time to become, I guess, what people call a guru. I'm not sure I am, but whatever the title is.
A good guru will never say they're a guru, Rick. So
Yeah.
it's okay. I'll call you a guru.
All right. So anyway, that's pretty much how I got there. And it was a matter of stumbling along, frankly, for years and years, not fully knowing why, and little by little gathering the knowledge. Because sadly, I didn't learn in college the stuff I really needed to know to take me to where I needed to be. I mean, it had to come through experience. It had to come through just hard-won, hands-on, on-the-job experience, because it didn't come from college, sadly. And that's kind of where how I got to where I am today. And of course, this all started in the mid-80s. By the mid-90s, I was really beginning to have a pretty good understanding of the issues, and it's really all just built since then.
And I think, you were, you and I had a talk, and you were actually in our On Track newsletter a year or so ago. And I remember you saying, around that time is when you didn't you talk about, oh, I'm going to forget the term now because I'm not an engineer, rise times.
Yes, oh,
What was
absolutely. In
that
fact,
some was it around that time that you started realizing that rise times were problematic?
that's exactly. It was actually in the 90s when I started realizing that the problem wasn't clock frequency. The problem is the frequency associated with the rising and falling edges of signals. If you have a device on a circuit board that is being clocked at a low frequency, 2, 3 megahertz, but you have a rise time of 2, 3, 4, 500 picoseconds, you'll have energy in every transmission event that extends upwards to a gigahertz or beyond, even though you're only clocking at a low frequency. So it isn't the clock. The clock really sets the timing for the circuit. That's really that's why it's called a clock. It sets timing. The rise times are really the key element that drive signal integrity and, even worse, drive EMI issues and interference issues. It's really all about rise time, yes.
I thought that was fascinating when you talked about that earlier. Now, I've sat in a few of your classes and I've learned a couple, in my novice kind of way, a couple really key things that really impressed me. One, I sat in one of your classes at IPC, and in that room of, say, 50 people, you asked the people in that room, who in this room are EEs and also printed circuit board designers? And a handful of people raised their hand. And you asked the question, which one's harder, the circuit design or the board design? And they all, like, guffawed at that and just said, duh, printed circuit board design. To which someone like me went, wait, I thought the EE was the heavy lifter, the one that kind of got the creds for doing the hard work. But you really taught me then that, and I think this is a lot because circuit boards have become so complex over time, too. That probably wasn't always true. And I had just missed that it had become. So why is it that you asked that question, and what made you choose to go from EE to actual board design?
Just frankly, the challenges I found, even in the late 70s, I found the challenges of board design to be more stimulating and more invigorating, and it made me feel just more alive every day to go to work than to be designing circuits and setting up test procedures and that sort of thing. And not that there's anything wrong with that. My God, I asked the question of those guys, which is more challenging? And most of them said board design. If you ask them which took them longer to learn, they would probably say circuit design took them longer to learn. There's more to understand to become a good quality circuit designer, to really get what it takes to design circuits to function properly. But once you have that knowledge, the actual effort and energy and time expended, once you're there, once you're at that knowledge level, is actually greater to lay out a circuit board than it is to do circuit design. And that's why they all answered that way. There, as you're right, there was a time when circuit board design was ridiculously easy. I have a circuit hanging on my wall. It's, you can't see it from with this camera, but it's a two-layer board that I designed in 1985. It is has no planes in it. It's just routed power and ground and routed signals. It's hideously complex because it's over 200 ICs on a circuit board that is really packed, and that's why it's hanging there, because it is such a complex, by the way, hand-taped artwork. It's a very complex artwork, and that's it makes people go ooh when they walk in, and that's why it's there. But the reality is, how that was laid out was immaterial, because it was its layout just almost didn't matter. You could do almost anything back then, and the circuit would still work. I remember seeing a tape layout in the 1990s of a guy from the aerospace world where I spent in the early 90s. A board this guy laid out in the 80s that there was a corner power and ground pin IC, a four, you know, like a 20 pin part, and there was a decoupling cap sitting above the IC, and he had a trace routed from the decoupling cap all the way around the body of the IC and back up to the power pin of the device. It was probably an inch and a half long trace from the, and it was a skinny little, you know, 10 mil trace, and the circuit worked. And it's because things were so slow back then compared to today. And it's about rise time, not clock frequency. Rise times back then were measured in the tens, in some cases, even hundreds of nanoseconds. Today, they're measured in the hundreds of picoseconds.
Right.
So they're at least 1,000 times faster than, or, you know, 100 to 1,000 times faster than they were in the 80s. And that's why things today are harder to make work than they were in those days.
Well, that just blows my mind to think of things. I mean, I know that it's happened. It's just hard to get your head around those kind of numbers, right? Sometimes. The other thing you said, and then we're going to jump into what you're going to talk about at Altium Lab. The other thing I learned from you, which I've told you about this a few times, it just made my head explode, was when you started talking about the energy in a circuit board is in the dielectric, and it was like, wait, what? No, it's running like water through pipes on the traces. Like, that's how I pictured it. And you explained it, and you showed a field you had, like a, and I all of a sudden I'm like, well, I knew some energy moved through the dielectric, but not the way you explained. And literally it was like, I felt embarrassed, and I remember walking up to you and going, okay, don't tell anyone, but I didn't know that. And you said,
a lot of people don't know that.
Then you said, it's okay, Judy, EEs don't know that. And I'm like, okay, all right, I don't feel so bad. So why don't we know that, Rick?
Because it's not talked about generally in college. Voltage and current are important parameters. They are. I just had a discussion very recently with Eric Bogatin on this exact subject. Voltage and current are extremely important parameters for identifying how transmission lines work, how why signal integrity issues arise. These are all things that you need to know. But the reality is, if you're trying to track down signal integrity issues, probably best to talk about voltage and current more than the fields. But when you're trying to identify why an interference problem has occurred, why did energy move from circuit A to circuit B? How in the world did it get over to circuit B? Where did that, because the voltage and current followed the traces that we routed in circuit A. So how did the energy, the reason is that, as you just said, the energy is in the fields, not in the voltage and current. And the fields travel through the dielectric space between the copper features. And that's the key element. When you route a trace, you're routing half of a transmission line. The other half of the transmission line is the plane, usually in most boards today, a plane, where the energy returns. So you have the forward current traveling down the trace that you've routed, and you have the return current traveling in the plane directly under the trace that's routing across the board. And that current is being established because there are fields with energy creating the voltage and current in the transmission line. And that's the key element to understand. If the energy weren't in the voltage, or I'm sorry, weren't in the fields, radio wouldn't work. Think about it. Radio is the broadcasting of fields into free space that get picked up by antenna that focus the energy into a radio. Anything that uses broadcast medium works in exactly that fashion. And the reason it works is because the energy is in the fields. Now, you can capture those fields with copper structures.
Right.
And when you do, then they will channel through the dielectric between the copper features. That's what an antenna does. An antenna focuses the fields into a center point that focuses them through a transmission line to the receiver. And that's exactly what, pardon me, what an antenna is. So, bottom line, because the energy is in the fields and the fields travel through the dielectric space, that's how things can sometimes spread. If we don't route traces properly, if we route, for example, two or three layers of traces above a plane, all of those trace layers are capable of coupling energy into one another, which causes the fields to then spread to places where they shouldn't be. Or if you change layers improperly, that's something I'm going to talk about at Altium Live. Is, well, the main thing I'm going to talk about is board stacking.
Yeah, so let's just jump in right there. I think that's a good place to segue. So Rick is doing, he's going to do an hour keynote at Altium Live, and the title of his talk is The Extreme Importance of PC Board Stack Up. So let's just jump right off there. So you've already started to talk about energy and fields and how they move. Talk about that relative to stack up and why that can be problematic and not so obvious places.
Yeah, I will. Yes. The main question that I ask people, if someone contacts me and says, Rick, we've got an interference problem of some kind, be it EMI, be it interference between circuits, whatever. I've had, within the last year, people contact me to talk about op-amp circuits that were being interfered with by other things in a circuit board or inside a system. Why does this happen is the question that's often asked. The first question I ask them is, what is your printed circuit board stack up? Because the most critical item to get correct, to have correctly done, is the board stack up. I'm terribly sorry.
That's okay.
The most critical item is the board stack up. And that's why I asked that question, because what people often get wrong is the board stack. I will often see examples of people who have put two or three voltage planes next to each other in a board stack with no grounds anywhere nearby. And that's one of the things I'm going to talk about at Altium Live, why that's a problem. It's a very serious problem. For example, if you had a circuit board that was many layers thick, and you had, let's say, 20 ground planes in the board, if you had a signal routed on layer one, and there was a ground plane on layer two, all 100% of the return current from that signal on layer one would be in the ground plane on layer two. And there will be no current from that trace in any of the other ground layers because the energy is in the dielectric between layers one and two. It establishes a forward current in the trace and a return current, a reverse current in that plane. All the other planes, it's like they're not even there. They don't even get used because the energy focuses itself in that tight area. And as I said a minute ago, if you have two or three signal layers and then a plane, now all these signals are all trying to reference that one plane. So all of those fields are intermingling with one another in that dielectric space, and they're all coupling energy into one another. And that's where the interference factor comes from. That's where it's one of the places where EMI comes from. There are many things that cause EMI. That's just one of the many problems. So it's a matter of keeping fields isolated from one another. That's what we have to do if we expect things to function properly.
Well, I think besides your prolific reading habits, being an EE, I think has obviously served you well in
Oh, it
this,
has. It
right?
served me extremely.
And so to understand how fields move, and because like I said, this, I have a very fundamental understanding of designs and certainly not of field theory and all of that and how physics work, but I think that's one reason why you've been such a popular speaker and consultant. You talked about, or you're going to talk about, and let's kind of tease it up a little bit, is the worst four-layer stack up. What does that mean?
Well, there are actually two four-layer stack ups that I'm particularly not fond of. One of them is, and I see this a lot in the automotive and appliance industries, where they will put a single ground plane on, let's say, layer three, and they'll put routing with routed power on 1, 2, and 4. And what we talked about a minute ago, having more than one routing layer referencing a single plane, in this case, layers 1 and 2, are both trying to reference the plane on layer three. And the result is the fields, even if you route them in orthogonal directions, the traces, the fields will still interleave one another and will couple energy. And the energy that couples won't be enough to cause a signal integrity problem if you do the stack up, if you just do the routing correctly. But it will still be enough that it can cause EMI problems. What a lot of people don't realize is that it takes as little as 8 to 10 microamps, millionths of an amp, of common mode current coupled into a balanced antenna to cause an FCC Class B radiated emissions failure.
Wow.
So as it takes that little bit of current to cause an EMI problem. And it doesn't take much coupling of fields to create 8 to 10 or even milliamps of noise current. So it's a problem that people need to pay attention to. So that's one of the four layers. The other four layer that's a problem is the one everybody uses, and that's power and ground on 2 and 3. And the reason that's a problem, if a circuit board is extremely thin, if a circuit board is say 10, 15, 20 mils thick, then those two power and ground planes on 2 and 3 are gonna be very close together. And when you do that, when the power and ground planes are extremely tight, a few mils to maybe at most 10 mils away from one another, then you can get away with having power and ground on 2 and 3 of a four layer. But if it's a 62 mil thick, a 1.6 millimeter thick board, and you have the planes on 2 and 3, they're going to be about a millimeter apart. Mm-hmm. And when planes are a millimeter apart, there's several things that go wrong. One, we rely on the planes to help deliver power. The planes basically become the low impedance path for power delivery to an IC. If you asked a lot of people, a lot of engineers, where does power come from in a circuit board? Their answer will be the power plane.
Right.
And of course, we know that's not true. The energy comes from the dielectric space between the power plane and the ground plane.
See, there now, it is again.
Exactly. If the dielectric space is tight, the capacitance will be fairly high, but most of all, the inductance of the planes will be very low. And when the inductance is low, now you have a low impedance delivery path for power. If the planes are far apart, as they are in a conventional 62 mil thick four layer board, the impedance is so high, it doesn't do a good job of delivering power, and you end up with large LDIDT voltage drops across the power system that we refer to that as power bus switching noise. And that issue alone can cause signal integrity problems, but mostly will cause EMI problems.
My head is exploding again. Four layer board.
Right.
062 standard thickness of your run of the mill board. I mean, this is not fancy. And you're saying this is a bad idea. And I'm like,
it is a bad idea.
Wait, what?
It doesn't.
The earth is not flat. I mean, it just, that's what it sounds like to me. Like,
I know.
It's crazy, but it's fascinating. And I can't wait to hear. I'm sure you'll dig into this more.
Well, I'm going to get into it more because there are routing implications with that four-layer board as well.
Okay.
I mean, it's worse than just power delivery. If you have a trace routed on layer one referencing the power plane and you want to change layers to layer four, you're going to have to move the reference to the ground plane. which means the energy in the dielectric space between 1 and 2 has to somehow move through that board to the dielectric space between 3 and 4. How's it going to get there? And there are people who will say, oh, it uses the decoupling capacitors. Well, that's true if the frequency is low enough. If rise times are slow enough, then that's what will happen. And that's why for years we could get away with four-layer boards with power and ground on 2 and 3, because rise times were so slow.
Gotcha.
Then now all of a sudden rise times are measured in the hundreds of picoseconds.
Got
and
it.
That four-layer board just doesn't work well anymore.
Yeah.
It's... Then we're going to get into that in more detail.
Okay, at Altium Live. Okay. You also talked about a six-layer.
Mm.
Please don't make my brain explode again, Rick, but go ahead. Tell me the six-layer that's a bad idea.
The six-layer board that everyone uses is signal, plane, like power, ground.
Mm-hmm.
Two signals. The other plane, if you put power on 2, they'll put ground on 5, and then a signal on 6. And this is a common six-layer board
mm-hmm.
that just about everybody on the planet uses. And it's even worse than the four-layer board with power and ground on 2 and 3. And we're going to get into intimate detail at Altium Live about why. It's about, I mean, think about what we said about power delivery with the four-layer board. If you have planes a millimeter apart and that's not good enough, what do you think putting them on 2 and 5 of a six-layer board where they're even further apart is going to do to power delivery? And now, worse than that, you have the fields between 2 and 5 sharing the dielectric space with signals that are on 3 and 4. And all of those fields are saying hello to each other, hey, let's get together and party. And they do get together and party. And they wreak havoc. And this is a bad board stack. And we're going to talk more about why it's a bad board stack. And then we're going to get into exactly what to do to fix it. There is a solution to be able to use that board stack and make it work. And we're going to talk about how to do that.
Well, I can't wait. And I intentionally wanted to have you on today to tease that out, because for those of you that don't know already, Rick teaches all over North America and sometimes out of the country as well. If you haven't seen it, we will share all these links in the show notes. But he's been teaching. He's been on at least North American tour with a series put on by UP Media called PCB
right.
Today. And those are 2 days, right, Rick?
They're two-day events. And then we go through everything we've discussed here and much, 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 much more.
Right.
We go through, I mean, it's 2 days. You know,
2 days. So I highly recommend UP Media's PCB Today with Rick Hartley. We will share that link for any of you that might want to get a full 2 days. At Altium Live, we're going to have you drink from the fire hose and give you an hour of Rick Hartley talking as fast as he can.
Right.
Rick also speaks at PCB West, which is in Santa Clara in September. I think it's September 12th this year, or that week of September 12th.
September 11, 12, and 13, I believe.
11, 12.
It's a three-day event.
It's a three-day event. Again, loaded with great content. There's an exposition day, but Rick teaches more than one class there, and they're always packed. So
yeah, I'm teaching actually 6 classes this year.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Besides Rick, there's a lot of really other illustrious teachers. It's like good luck with that one, picking your courses, because it's a really good show also put on by UP Media. So,
I mean, that show has Dan Beaker, Susie Webb. There's a host of people. Mike Creedon, I think, is going to be there this year. There's just a boatload of people with talent talking at that.
Such talent. And by the way, I want to boast just for 5 seconds, because I have the neatest friends in the whole wide world. And that is that Susie Webb will also be teaching at Altium Live. Mike
yes,
Creedon will be there. I don't know if he's teaching yet. Eric Bogatin, who Rick mentioned, will also be a keynote speaker. And I think that conversation you were talking about having with Eric was probably on an email feed that I was eavesdropping
on. Yeah, I was actually just a direct email with Eric because I think you were involved.
I got looped in there, and, you know, a significant portion went over my head, but it was just interesting to see you guys kind of bantering about
yes.
this subject. So again, Eric will be one of the other keynote speakers. So we're I'm very privileged to know some very bright, gifted people, and Altium is bringing all these wonderful folks together. So I hope you will join us, and I hope this conversation has encouraged you to join us. And we do have early bird pricing, which is like 10% off through the end of July. So please be my guest. Rick has shared links with us to other resources. Oh, you wanted to mention something about a paper that's floating out there that you no longer endorse. So why don't you mention something about that?
Thank you. Yeah, about 15 years ago, I wrote a paper called Board Stack Up to Control EMI. And while the basic content of the paper is more or less correct, some of the board stacks that I put, that I suggested in that paper, I have since learned were not good ideas. And in fact, the 4-layer and 6-layer that we just talked about are two of them that I recommended in that paper, because I believed at that time that they were the right thing to do. I've since learned why they aren't. So if you happen to stumble across that paper again, it's called Board Stack Up to Control EMI, or to help control EMI, something to that effect. And if you stumble across that, just ignore it. Ignore it because
we're going to get Rick Hartley 2.0.
Yeah, there you go.
Where things have gotten faster, and he's, I don't know that you've gotten smarter. I think just the physics of the boards people are designing today.
The physics have changed, and that's a key point. That's a very good point, Judy. And that's partly why, I mean, it's possible that when I wrote that paper, that 4- and 6-layer board were fine.
Yeah, exactly.
But
the speed,
today.
Right. And again, that's why we always advocate here that you need to always be learning, because technology does not stand still, and what worked yesterday is not going to work tomorrow. And so we try our best to stay on top of it. Rick, thank you so much for joining us. I also am going to put in a photo, hopefully it won't embarrass you, Rick, of, you know, what I want to say about Rick Hartley and people like Susie Webb, Mike Creedon, Eric Bogatin, we are all, you all as designers and engineers are really standing on their shoulders, and they used to do this stuff by hand. So I have the neatest photo ever of Rick Hartley with a big fat 70s tie, I think, handling out the biggest board ever that I've seen, the biggest tape up I've ever seen.
That's actually the one hanging on my wall.
It is. That's the one. Yes. Yeah. So I'm going to share that in the links too, because you guys that just have snazzy, racy tools and you started designing 10 years ago won't believe that stuff the guys, these guys and gals did by hand. So.
Right.
Well, Rick, we totally and completely look forward to Altium Live. Thanks so much for agreeing to come and invest in the design community. And thanks again for doing this podcast. You're a dear
Judy,
friend.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, and thank you so much for all that you do for the industry, Rick. We really appreciate you.
It's a pleasure.
Again, this has been Judy Warner with Altium's On Track podcast, and Rick Hartley of R. How do you say that? R. Hartley?
Our Hartley Enterprises.
We look forward to you tuning in next time. Until then, remember to always stay on track.